there are basically two ways of looking at the world. You have the evolutionary view, which is that in the beginning, bang, and you have the biblical worldview, which says that in the beginning, God. So the way you start looking at any of the evidence for creation or for evolution determines what your outcome is going to be. Because if you start with a big bang and there is no God and there is just this mindless, thoughtless, heartless series of mutations that caused us to become what we are today, then the way that you look at life is going to be very different, and in my opinion, less hopeful than if you start with God creating man in his image with purpose and with love. So as we look at this topic tonight, we're going to be looking at the idea of evidences. Evidences that would support a biblical view of the world. And as we talked about, the creation model does not support or necessitate millions and millions and millions of years for us to become what we see today and to see the things around us that we see today. The first evidence that I'd like to point out is the sediment on the sea floor. So if you look at the sediment all around the world, there's basically 20 billion tons of rock and dirt debris that are deposited on the sea floors from the continents around the world every year. 20 billion tons. So about 1 billion of that is eradicated because of the shifting of tectonic plates, and they shift about an inch and a half a year. But in that process, about a billion tons gets taken up. So that still leaves about 19 billion tons of rock and dirt that are being taken from the continents and put into the seafloors every year. So if this world has been the way it is for billions of years and all the processes that are in motion right now, erosion, all of those things have been happening as they have been for billions of years, you would expect that the sediment on the bottom of the seafloor would be incredibly deep. But the average thickness of the seafloor sediment is only about 1,300 feet. So looking at that, the sediment after 3 billion years, you would expect to see 250 times more sediment than we see today. So if everything is going along at the same way as it always has, which is the assumption of evolution, that all the processes that we see in motion today have always been going that direction, then you would have incredibly more sediment on the seafloors than you see today. So this is an argument against the long years, millions of years of evolution and of natural processes over that span. So the Earth doesn't have to be millions and billions of years old. The estimates are something like 4.3 billion years that the Earth has been devolving as we see it moving and changing around us. But that doesn't have to be if we were created in the image of God about 6,000 years ago. About 4,000 years ago, there was this worldwide flood that changed the entire world topography. Everything about the world changed during that world flood. And all of the sediments that we see around the world are very readily explained by the runoff from a worldwide flood only 4,000 years ago. So this would it would take about 12 million years, according to their processes, and not the billions of years that they say the Earth has been in this process. So it's very unlikely that the way they say it happened is how it happened. A second evidence, and this is from an anecdotal observation, but I find it interesting because it was an observation by someone right here in Dry Creek. Some of you remember Skid and Marnie Tidmore. They live just around the corner there. Skid was telling me a story. He's an oil derrick driller off on the Gulf. And he was telling me this story about having drilled down, and it was I'd have to talk to him again to get the exact depth that they were at, but he hit something with the drill. And he was afraid he was going to break off the drill, but ended up, he kept backing up and hitting it, and it got through what they were hitting. Well, as they were drilling, parts of the debris started coming up that they had gone through. And it was actually wood that was still pliable and still smelled like wood. And yet it was buried, who knows, I don't remember how deep it was, under all of the stuff that they were drilling through in the Gulf. So if that had been there for millions of years, would it still be pliable? Would it still smell like wood or cedar or whatever kind of wood it was? I don't think so. The interesting thing was, because Skid actually took some of it and put it in his bags. But geologists came once they heard about what was going on and confiscated all of the evidence. So there's nothing to say it was or wasn't anything. So I find that to be not a scientific proof, but I would recommend that if you're interested in further study and research, there's a website called answersingenesis.org. And what they do is incredibly high-level scientific research. So the stuff that they put out is not anecdotal like what I just said. It's not just, well, my friend Bob, he was out there and he saw something that was really weird. And no, that's not what they do. They do very strenuous scientific research. And there's a lot of evidence that really looks good and makes a lot of sense that they don't use because it's not scientifically verifiable. So if you want some really good research about the issue of creation and evolution, Answers in Genesis is a great, great resource. I'd encourage you to go and look through what they have available. Has anybody here been involved in Answers in Genesis stuff recently? Seen something like an ark or a creation museum? That's those guys. They built the ark in Kentucky, and they have a creation museum that is really, really top-notch. Good, good stuff. So there's lots of evidence for a young Earth. The third one I wanted to talk to you about, I have read about this and have really been fascinated by this story of the Lost Squadron. And this is a squadron of planes. There were six P-38 Lightning fighter planes and two B-17 Flying Fortresses that were in 1942. We're right in the middle of the World War II. They were going over to fight Hitler. They were flying over the polar ice cap, and they were getting ready to do a refuel in Iceland, and they were hit with a just whiteout blizzard. And they realized in communicating with the Iceland place they were going to refuel at that they were closed. There was no way to land there. So they returned, tried to get back to home base. The home base was socked in, as they said. They couldn't land there. So they realized, completely out of fuel, their only option was to land on the East Greenland coast. And in doing so, they were able to, there were some injuries, but they were able to, after 9 days, all of those pilots and crewmen got rescued off of that glacier. And basically, the planes were just left there. In 1980, a crew decided we should go try and salvage those planes. We should try and go dig those up because their assumption was based upon evolutionary principles. Because if you drill down in an ice core, basically you just like take the core out of ice, you drill down and pull it up, you can see rings, kind of like on a tree stump. And what their assumption is that each of those rings would represent a year of thawing and refreezing. So what they assumed in 1980 was we're going to go up there, we're going to find these planes, we're going to shovel some snow off of the wings, fuel them up, and fly off.
40 years.
So in roughly 40 years, almost 50 years had gone by, and they really thought that they would just be able to kind of dig down a little bit and get them. There was a problem. Those planes were under 250 feet of ice. So that really doesn't fit with an evolutionary model that said it was took millions of years for the polar ice cap to build up to the level that it's at now. So, but they did some incredibly hard work, and they had these big contraptions that would drill down a 4 foot wide column into the ice all the way 250 feet, and they would lower somebody down there, and he would use some steam and water to melt the ice around, and then they would take it apart in this little cavern that they created under the ice, 250 feet below the ice, and then they would drag up the pieces. And basically, they assembled two or three of those fighter planes that are actually able to fly today. So it's an incredible story about salvaging planes. But in doing so, they also disproved what they thought was happening in the ice caps in terms of the ice buildup. So it's very important that we see the world through a biblical framework, because there are just tons of evidences, and we just scratched the surface of them tonight. There are loads of evidences that point to a young Earth. You can look at the Grand Canyon and you see all of those layers and layers and layers of rock, how many feet deep the Grand Canyon is. And your assumption, based upon if you look at it as an evolutionist or as a creationist, is that either that was created as an evolutionist, a little water over a long time, or as a creationist, a lot of water over a very little time. So, which one of those happened? Well, the thing about science is, science can only tell you about right now. Science can't tell you when they dig up a dinosaur bone, that bone doesn't come with a tag on it that tells you how old it is. So it's up to the scientist to do what is called historical science, to kind of backtrack and try and figure out what happened and how something got to be what it is today. And that is a very, very flawed method, because you're putting a lot of the presuppositions and the ideas of the scientist into that process. Because if you start off with an evolutionary mindset, you're going to come to a completely different conclusion than if you start off with a creationist mindset. So, observational science, that's what we can do right here, right now, that tells us about what's going on in front of us. And that's incredibly beneficial. That does incredible work. But historical science relies a lot upon the perspective and the attitudes of the scientist. So, lot of times religious people, creationists, are accused of being anti-science because the scientists all agree that millions of years were required for us to be who and what we are today, and yet we don't agree with that. We don't disagree with science. We do disagree with scientists, because a scientist is very likely to put his bias into his research. And we do the same thing as a Bible-believing creationist. We put our presuppositions, our bias, into the research that we do for creation evidence. But the truth is, there's only one right answer. And we've talked about this before. If you have all of the arguments down pat and you can debunk any evolutionary philosophy, if you can win any debate hands down, and those people whom you're debating against go to hell because they've not accepted Christ, they might have gotten beaten in a debate, but that doesn't mean they've accepted Christ. If we win the debate and lose their soul to an eternal hell, have we won? No. So our job is not to win a debate. Our job is to win souls. So if our understanding of a creationist worldview can help us in making somebody understand there's another possibility, there's another way that we could have gotten here besides billions of years, then absolutely use it. But many times people's objections don't necessarily center on science. They center on experience. Most of people's objections to salvation center on their personal experience, their hurts, their wounds. So if you don't dig a little bit and find out why they think what they think, because we can disagree with them all day about abortion and evolution and just a myriad of topics, but to disagree with them, even though we're biblically right, without trying to find out why they think what they think, we're still not going to have a eternal benefit in their life. Because I am convinced that people do not care how much you know until they know how much you care. If we don't show them that we care, they're not going to be worried about why we know so much about creation or evolution. They're simply going to think, well, I better study harder because I lost that one. So our heart needs to be towards people and not necessarily towards winning. So any questions that you have, any observations about what we've talked about tonight? That was fun.